It's 8:17 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KBCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers. In the studio with details, I have Park City Planner Kirsten Whetstone. Good morning.
Morning.
So a number of items have been continued, but let's just talk a little bit about one that we've talked about in the past, and that is the 1893 Prospector Avenue, a master plan development for a new building containing 11 residential units. This is going back to what, to staff, to try and amend the land management code? Because what you found out that you can't do a master plan development for the project?
Yes, that's correct. I think when about 3 years ago, we tightened up the ability to do master plan developments in the historic district. And in doing that language, we somehow prevented master plan developments that didn't meet the threshold, 10 single family lots or 10 unit equivalents, which would be 20,000 square feet. If you have a project of that size, you're required to do a master plan development in all of the zones except, and then there were all these exceptions, and then there was a clause that was put in that said something about no master plan developments are allowed, blah, blah, blah. As it turns out that even if you wanted to do a master plan development, which is really one of our only tools at this point to do a little more innovative, a little more flexible. We get better architecture. Maybe a part of the building is a little higher, another part's lower. We get the affordable housing. A lot of things come along with a master plan development. And for some reason, we tightened it up because there was really a concern of having master plan developments in Old Town, partly because of that, I guess. And anyway, so this one, it got to the 11th hour. It's really an 11 residential units. One of those would be affordable, which doesn't count in the density. And they're smaller. They're really more targeted to a young professional. Turns out they have only, I think, less than 6 unit equivalents. They have about 11,000 square feet. So then we said, well, really, it makes sense to be able to have this, the ability to do a master plan development, and especially in the GC, which is the general commercial. So we're going to go back and propose an amendment to the land management code for the limited industrial, the light industrial, and the GC to allow master plans of any size if you choose.
Okay, so it's not going to be dependent on the number of units or the square footage. It's just you need to allow it in those two zones.
Exactly, and then we'll require it if it's certain project. That way you get to see the bigger picture.
Okay. And so then once that's done, it needs to go back to City Council for approval, and then it can come back to
exactly.
Planning Commission?
Exactly. So right now we're looking at the Council or Planning Commission in June, and I believe we can still make the last meeting at the City Council end of June, and then this project, this 1893 Prospector, will go back to the Planning Commission July 8th.
Mm-hmm. So do you see any downfalls, though, to allowing an MPD in those zones?
Certainly not in the general commercial. I think the benefits definitely outweigh one of the things that you can apply for is a request to the Planning Commission is a height exception. And some people think, well, height exceptions are never good. But in this case, you really do have a much more interesting building, and you have a more livable building with more corners and light. And so the architecture of that building is superior to if you just built like straight up 3 stories, a box. It does seem like a tool that we should be able to use, especially in those two zones.
All right. A number of land management code amendments also being continued. You're just not ready to present those yet?
Right. We're still working on some of the specific language, mostly the non-conforming uses. The state code changed a bit in terms of non-conforming uses, how much of a building can be taken down or demolished or involuntarily or burned down before you get to build it back the way it was or have to meet the new codes. And so we're working on the code there, as well as some of the annexation procedures and the applicability of the steep slope conditional use permit. We're just clarifying that language. So all of those amendments, and I think we have eight different chapters involved, will be going back to the Planning Commission with those on June 10th.
All right. And also another item, the Alice Claim Project. This has also been continued until next month. So what's changed? I mean, I guess you just got a bunch of new information a couple weeks ago.
And Christy Alexander, the planner on that, said that they received some information on the retaining walls and some of the engineering work. The city engineer was out on vacation last week, and so she wasn't able to really go over all of that to where she felt that she could address it adequately in a staff report, and felt it's just 2 weeks between this meeting and June 10th, so we thought we'd better err on the side of caution and make sure we have that information correct.
All right. On the consent agenda, you do have two lot combinations to combine two lots, both on Woodside Avenue here. Staff, I think, recommending approval on both of these. Any concern, though, that, I mean, as we kind of move forward, we're kind of losing that historical 25 by 75 foot lot and making these bigger, so now we have bigger homes?
Yeah, there's some of that in the general plan. That was definitely one of the discussion items about the size of homes in Old Town, not only the additions to historic homes, but also combining lots, and then that allows a larger home, although the land management code does have a formula where it limits, you don't get to build twice as big a house on two lots. There's a formula, so it's a smaller footprint, and you get bigger setbacks, 5 feet on each side as opposed to three, same front and back. But in both of these cases, I believe in one, I think they both are non-historic on one side, homeowner bought the other, and one is landscaping the vacant lot, just wanted it part of their property, and the other one, which, of course, in the future they could build an addition. But there's definitely some concern in that, and though it's the code right now allows it, in fact, encourages it in the purpose statements and combinations of Old Town lots. So that's something we're going to go back and go through the land management code, looking at the general plan implementation and probably bring some of those items, house size and like lot combinations, and bring those back before the Planning Commission.
So I think it was the one at 327 Woodside. I mean, are they talking about tearing the house down and starting over, or they're just going to add on to what they've got?
327. I don't know if that's the one. At this time, I'm not sure if they're going to tear it down. One of them might have been an A-frame, too.
Yeah, this was a pretty contemporary-looking house.
Yeah. And I think this is just a remodel, actually, and to add on. We have had a couple, though, where the A-frames, as wide as they were, they tended to either sit on a lot and a half or two lots, and we haven't had too much luck in saving those.
All right. Well, with news last week that the Kimball Arts Center is moving, any word from the new buyer of the Kimball Arts Center about his plans?
I haven't seen anything new. I guess we were waiting for an amended application, and then with the new buyer, whether that new buyer takes that new application or not, or comes in with a new one, I'm not sure what will happen with that.
Mm-hmm. And then what about Bonanza Park, which is where the Kimball is moving to? I mean, at some point there had been talk about, the Kimball could be perhaps the anchor of that development there. Anything moving forward with that?
Let's see, Bonanza Park.
And the form-based code?
The form-based code. That's that they have to work out the details of that as to whether that is something that they're going to move forward with. And I imagine we'll have a couple of public hearings coming up here once we get over this. Right now in the planning department, we're reviewing an incredible number of building permits. I think maybe even to date, more building permits have been issued through the planning department, because we review everything as well, then in some cases all summer. So we've been really busy in that end, and I think now trying to do land management code and all of these applications and these long-range plans, they're all stacking up. So we'll get to the, I think there'll be another public hearing on the form-based code, and that is something the general plan recommended to happen there, but I guess just working through the details.
All right. And what about Thomas Eddington's replacement? Any news there? I mean, are we still interviewing?
I haven't heard anything.
Okay. And any news with regard to Treasure? You haven't heard about that in a while?
No, I haven't. That hasn't been in the news.
Okay. Okay. Kirsten, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Again, the Park City Planning Commission is meeting tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. in the City Council Chambers at the Marsac Building. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Stay tuned. Still to come, we'll be talking with Pastor Charles Robinson about Thursday's Project for Deeper Understanding Forum, Death with Dignity. And later on in the hour, we'll be talking with Park City Institute Director Terry Orr about Thursday's TEDx Women event. First, in the studio with me now from Summit County, I have Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. How are you, Leslie?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So let's see. The Silver Creek Village Center development back before council. They'll be reviewing it, perhaps approving it. In the last few meetings, council pinpointed a couple of issues that needed to be ironed out. One of those was the amount of commercial square footage. There was some talk about there was no limit to it.
Well, I think there is a limit to it. I've heard the number, and don't quote me on this because I'm not familiar or totally familiar with the document, but I think 50,000 square feet is about the number I've heard. So I believe there is a limit, but perhaps there's some provisions or language in there that the council had some questions about. So staff and the attorneys and the developer will be looking at that and reviewing that with council.
All right. As part of that, there is also a school site. The developers have to provide that site for a school or other civic use. Any idea? Does it get donated to South Summit School District?
Or? Well, I don't know the conclusion yet. I think the developer wanted to save that for the council session. But I do know that they have been meeting with South Summit School District, discussing that with the planners and the attorney's office to make sure that by Wednesday they have something to propose.
Mm-hmm. Does the county have any need for something there? I mean, if it could be a civic use?
I don't know specifically at this point. We haven't discussed that. There's a possibility in the future with having a population density over there that we could have some uses. But we do have the Justice Center and the Sheriff's Office in the area that also has some office space. So we already have some services in that area.
Okay. Staff seems to have some concern about the footprint. Are there limits to the height of the buildings there?
As with most development agreements and within our code, there's height restrictions. So I'm assuming there are with this.
Okay. Any other concern about that? I know folks from Promontory are pretty concerned about the traffic impacts.
Absolutely. I think traffic impacts probably are the other big thing that's going to come up. You know, the council went through the document with a pretty fine-tooth comb the last time they looked at it, brought out a lot of language changes that they wanted to see. I know that's been worked on. Don't know whether this is going to be the last time that we look at it or not. So we'll just see what happens on Wednesday.
All right. And what about affordable housing?
The affordable housing piece has been in there since every time that we've looked at it. It seems pretty solid as far as agreement between the council and the developer about what they're looking for. So I believe that's issue has been settled.
All right. Also, discussion and possible adoption of a resolution. This has to do with Congressman Rob Bishop's Public Lands Initiative,
yes,
the Wilderness Proposal. Are we ready to move forward with that?
Well, it's an amendment to that. At the time that we were passing the first, or the council was looking at the first resolution, Park City was looking at some parcels that they wanted to include as BLM parcels that are orphan parcels within the city that they wanted included in the language. And we have that language now from the city, so we're going to amend the resolution and reissue it to Bishop's office with those parcels included.
Okay, and these are actually just right up here above Deer Valley Drive, correct?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see, what else have we got?
More BYS Energize.
Yeah? And so where are we with that?
Well, it's just another part of the step. You know, we have to do certain things in adopting a development area for this proposal in order to issue bonds. And so this is another step to define the area that it will be included in, which is all of Summit County. Define that language to the state so that we can go through the process properly.
Okay. I think originally we were talking about the unincorporated areas until you got approval then from each of the municipalities?
One of the steps that we do have to go through is get agreement from each of the municipalities that they want their citizens included in that. So as another step in this process, we'll be going out with resolutions, proposed resolutions to all the incorporated areas and trying to get their approval to do that. And so far, we haven't seen any resistance to that. It's just another step we have to go through.
All right. And we're talking about like an opportunity of $4.2 million or something.
Well, $4.3 million in lower interest rate loans that will be available to citizens, homeowners within the county in order to make energy improvements to their homes.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you, the Canyons Golf Course scheduled to open for the summer on Friday. Last fall,
very excited about that.
Last fall, when it opened for the day, your predecessor Bob Jasper had an issue about one of the golf holes near Highway 224. There, has that been resolved?
It has been resolved in negotiations that we've had. It hasn't been, I don't think, physically resolved yet. There is going to be some changes to the holes in order to accommodate some safety concerns that they had. And then we're still working on, or the developer is still working on, the maintenance building related to the golf course, which will be moved. And that's going on right now. So what we're calling it is substantially complete. And they are going to open, and they're going to be people are going to be playing golf this summer. And we're pretty excited to see that move forward.
So at least for now, it'll be like we knew it for the day that it was open?
That's correct.
Okay. And any idea when the council will once again be looking at that interlocal agreement for Mountain Accord?
Agreement for Mountain Accord, you know, the dates have jumped around so much in the last few months that I'm not completely up to speed on that. I know we're still talking about it. I believe we're going to see some things in later June as we discuss that and get closer to that ILA completion.
Okay. And then, of course, as a member of the National Guard, anything? Did you do anything special yesterday?
I haven't. I took a nap.
Good.
I watched a couple of military-type movies and just hung out with my family, and that's what I usually do.
Great. All right, Tom. Thank you. That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Again, the Summit County Council meeting at the county at the Sheldon Richards Building, I should say, starting at 4 o'clock tomorrow. 8:40 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Coming up on Thursday, 7 p.m., the Project for a Deeper Understanding holding another forum. This one, it's on death and dignity. In the studio with me, I have the organizer of the event, Charles Robinson, along with Leanna Tietenberg. She's the executive director of Yarrow Hospice. And on the phone with me, Dr. Margaret Batlin, a philosophy professor at the University of Utah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So we'll start with you, Charles. You can give us just the details of the forum.
Okay. Well, it's this coming Thursday night, as you just said, at 7 o'clock at St. Luke's. The location is in Snyderville. The church is located behind the Blue Roof store off of 224. Essentially, the evening will be a three-way conversation between myself, the panel, and the audience. We'll be taking questions from the microphone at the very beginning of the evening, which is a little different in structure. And we'll spend 90 minutes engaging around what I hope will be three sort of areas, if I can keep it moving in these directions. We'll begin the evening with a reflection on the nature of death. What is death? Is there a way for us to think about death beyond simple biological cessation? What if we think about it from a different standpoint? Why do we fear it? Do we need to fear it as much as we do? Do we have a right to die? So we'll talk a little bit about human rights and the moral basis for rights. Then this in sort of phase two, we'll get into the legislative and end of things, the terminology around these end of life situations. By the way, the forum is entitled "Hard hard choices at the end of life. How do we decide? And that really is the focus in terms of all of us preparing ourselves for the inevitable. Most of us, or many of us, have already encountered the death of a parent, and we know from firsthand experience how agonizing some of those medical decisions can be, how complicated things can get. So we'll be looking at the proposed Utah Death with Dignity legislation. It was debated in the last legislative session, and no doubt it'll come up again in the future. It wasn't passed into law, but it'll continue to be debated. We'll compare that to Oregon and Washington. And
go ahead, Dr. Batlin.
I was just saying it was discussed in committee. It was not out before the full legislature, although we can expect that it will be in a coming session.
Okay. Well, let's talk to you just a little bit about it. I mean, and just this notion of this right to die. I'm guessing as a philosopher, that's something that you take on. I mean, really, is it about religion versus the rest of us and what we want?
Well, it's often constructed as religion versus more liberal thinkers, but that seems to me to be the wrong way to think about it, and that religion needn't be at odds with the death with dignity, right to die movement. That what we really need to think about is what's the appropriate role of each one of us in our own deaths. To what degree should we think of ourselves as not only being the architects of our own lives during the middle part of our lives, but to what degree should we be able to try to shape our own ends when the end is coming? The legislation is about people with terminal illnesses. Death is coming anyway, and it's not an issue of life versus death. It's an issue of death now versus death later. What role may we play in shaping that event?
And shouldn't we be able to shape it? I mean, we certainly can make those decisions for our pets now. I mean, it's our life. Why? What are the arguments about not letting us do what we want?
Well, the usual argument is that our pets are, to put it coarsely, animals. They can't make their own choices, but we humans, is the frequent distinction, can make those choices. The question is, should we? And of course, many thinkers think that that's a completely appropriate role of the human. You can't always shape the character of your own death. A modest fraction of deaths occur without warning or suddenly. But now, in this modern era, in the developed world, the vast majority of us die of diseases with long downhill courses. So cancer deaths, deaths from organ failure, heart failure, other kinds of organ failure, deaths involving dementia, those all have very long downhill trajectories for the most part. What role may we play in shaping or making choices at the end of life?
Yeah, and I guess for a lot of people, it's an opportunity, I mean, to choose, you know, to put yourself down, for lack of a better word, as opposed to, I mean, committing suicide, because that then surprises everybody. I mean, at least with the, you know, when you have the chance to die with dignity, you're able to say goodbye to those people you want to say goodbye to.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think putting yourself down is perhaps not a phrase that suggests a negative flavor to it. Some people would see it as culminative, right? I've lived a life, and I bring it to an end on my own terms, right? Mm-hmm. With the people I want to have around me there present, at a time and place of my own choosing. That's the kind of rationale that we'll be exploring.
And Leanna, let's bring you into the conversation as the director there of Yarrow Hospice. I mean, basically, you watch people as they leave
yes,
the earth. Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah. And in terms of what you can do for them, I mean, I guess the most important thing out of all of this is to actually have some instructions about what somebody wants, huh?
Well, certainly as a hospice, we work with the patient and the family in terms of what their objectives and what they would like to see happen for whatever time is remaining. And my job is to ensure to the degree that it's, number one, legal, and number one, reasonable. I mean, reasonable meaning is that I'm not going to do something that's absurd, but certainly support them in what they want. And, of course, our focus is to relieve suffering and pain. And that is almost always possible in the short run. But I think, as Dr. Batten indicated, there are so many illnesses that where the trajectory is incredibly long. And those people, you know, might want a different choice. They may want to rethink that. And I think to that extent, as a hospice agency, we would support whatever that would be and be there for them.
So what is it that somebody needs to have? I mean, in terms of giving you direction and in terms of how somebody's life ends?
Well, at this time, there is no legal possibility of my supporting somebody, basically ending their lifespan. So therefore, I do whatever I can to make sure their suffering is minimized and their pain is minimized. That is through medication. It's through alternative care, whether it's massage, music, those kinds of comfort things. And most of it is pretty successful. Again, in the short run, it seems to be working fairly well. And I mean, you can also do palliative sedation, where you basically have somebody have enough medication to where they really are not altogether present. And that's certainly the last resort that we do at this time, and only when it's really indicated for people who have intractable pain.
All right. And then, Charles, who's going to be on the panel to talk about this fear of death? I mean, as you kind of mentioned, I mean, spoiler alert, you know, we all die. But at the same time, it just becomes very emotional, and people do fear it.
Yes.
So who's going to kind of talk about that?
Well, we have Dr. Batten, of course, who you just spoke with. We also will have an LDS representative. David Ure is going to represent the LDS Church for us. Carolyn Marsh, who's a colleague of mine down in Salt Lake City, she's going to represent sort of the progressive wing of the church. We also have Mary Lee Latta, who's a Buddhist teacher, and Dr. Fred Gottlieb, who is a palliative care and geriatric physician. And we are in a fevered search for a Roman Catholic representative, but we're having trouble with that. So if anyone listening this morning can help us, we'd appreciate that.
And that being because there's very specific doctrine in terms of what can happen with somebody dying?
Yeah, I mean, the Roman Catholic Church has a kind of a clear teaching about end-of-life issues and sanctity of life, and I'd like to see someone represented on the panel from that church, if we could get someone.
Okay.
I think we should say that.
And how would they get a hold of you if they are interested?
They could just Google St. Luke's
and
Park City. And go ahead, Dr. Benton.
It's not a matter of resistance as far as we can tell. It's a matter of the clergy that we've been able to contact all being extremely busy with many other things. We shouldn't interpret that as resistance. Although it's worth noting that the Catholic Church in general has been one pole of the discussion over the proposed legislation, Death with Dignity. It has steadfastly maintained opposition. But we should also say about this panel that it's not constructed as a debate. It's constructed, I think, Father Charles, as an exploration, as a discussion, as a mutual rumination on issues about the end of life.
Okay, I need to leave it at that. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, coming up this Thursday as well, Park City Institute putting on the TEDx Women event. In the studio with details, I have the Institute Director, Terry Orr, along with Katie Wright, who's going to be co-moderating the event. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
You want to give us the details, Terry?
Well, the quick and dirty is we start at 8:45. The speakers end around 4:30. In between that, there will be lunch break. There'll be snacks. And at the end of the day, there'll be, from Ritual Chocolates, a chocolate tasting. There'll be an adult beverage to kind of wind up the end of your day. But in the middle of that will be some of the most amazing women and men on the planet right now doing extraordinary things who will hopefully inspire you in the course of the day.
All right. So it's a TEDx event that's actually happening in Monterey.
It is. It'll be live streamed back here.
And you're going to be in Monterey.
I am this year. I'm tickled to be invited to be there, so it'll be great fun.
All right. And so you've got Katie and Phyllis?
And Phyllis Robinson. Uh-huh. And Katie is a veteran of co-hosting TEDx events. I think she's done global and women and exchange.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exchange. I don't know if global. Exchange and women I've done.
All right. So there's kind of, you know, we'll see a session. It's kind of broken up, I think, in thirds or something.
And there are three sessions.
Right. And so between the sessions then, what are you going to be doing? Or
yeah. So essentially, I just host and keep it running smoothly. But really, Terry's wonderful staff makes sure that everything happens and works well. I think the importance and the reason why I love being a part of it is that, you know, as a busy working professional, it's really easy to get lost in the weeds of my calendar and my day. And this is such a great opportunity to sort of pick your head up and hear from people literally from all over the globe doing extraordinary work, perspectives that I would never pick up, you know, scanning the newspaper or reading online. And so it's just such a nice break in the middle of the week to be a part of this in our small town, something that's happening globally. And I just encourage everyone to give themselves that opportunity and attend and immerse yourself, and the world will continue and you'll catch up in the next day or two with whatever you missed at work.
Yeah. So in years past, you've brought some local women, musicians, speakers in. Are you doing that this year?
There's no live format this year. We're going with the really tight, using every bit of their content this year. That this day is really packed full. And so this is all live streaming.
All right. So who's gonna be there?
Katie has a list there.
Yeah, I was just...
You know, it's like any TED event. They're mostly names you've never heard of until suddenly their talks get on the TED site and they're being rebroadcast all over the world. So scientists and musicians...
You know, I was just paging through. There's a glacier explorer that we'll be hearing from, a disaster roboticist, political scientist... Sounds so boring in this context.
Bela Fleck will be there. And Bela, as we know, is not a woman. And he'll be doing part of the last session with Abigail Washburn, I think is her name. Great musician. So it follows the format of TED. There will be people speaking about technology. There will be people entertaining you. And there'll be people who are talking about design, whether it's the design of a robot or the design of a book cover.
All right. You need to be a member. You have.
That's the only thing you need to do. You need to be a member, and memberships start at $30, and it lasts you for a year, and you have all kinds of other benefits. And again, the day includes lunch at St. Regis and break and snacks. And
chocolate.
And chocolate at the chocolate. End of the day, and maybe a little red wine to go with the chocolate. And as you know, Leslie, because you've attended a bunch of these, it's the conversations that happen also between the sessions that people in the community start talking and thinking about themselves differently, but about our community differently. What could we do if we tried that here?
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
It's going to be a wonderful day, and I hope people join us.
And we can only accommodate 150 women, so or people because we have enlightened men that come too. So only 150 that day.
Just need to call the box office then to make
call
that
the box office and right away because we have to give St. Regis a head count for food.
655-3114.
Bingo.
And how are tickets going for summer sales?
They're going kind of crazy. We have sold out in reserve for Grace Potter, for Chris Botti. We're almost there with Government Mule. If you are interested in reserve seats for the summer series, get them now.
Okay. Terry and Katie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks Leslie. Leslie.